Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Bijou Banter. In the Zoom studio, we got one special guest, Dana Woolery.
Hello.
And myself, Matthew Ha. And today it is Friday, December 2nd of 2022. And this week's theme is animation. We're going to be talking about two animated films currently, currently in theaters, specifically at FilmSea at the Chauncey in beautiful downtown Iowa City. And that is Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, his lifelong passion project that's going to be continuing its theatrical release and also on Netflix very shortly, as well as Strange World, the latest Disney film. Now, we're going to begin with Del Toro's Pinocchio, which is directed by Del Toro as well as Mark Gustafson, and it's based on the classic Italian novel of the same name. And it has a really strong cast for an animated film, and we'll read it all right here. It stars Ewan McGregor, David Bradley, Gregory Mann, Bern Gorman, John Turturro, Ron Perlman, Finn Wolfhard, Cate Blanchett, Tim Blake Nelson, Christoph Waltz, and Tilda Swinton. And the plot of this movie, it's essentially Pinocchio. We originally talked about both Disney films a few months ago. And yeah, it's about a wooden puppet who comes to life. Although this time, it's even more darker, if you could believe it or not. And what'd you think about this movie?
It was okay. Also, I'd like to bring up that this was also produced by Lisa Henson, Jim Henson's daughter, and was also co-written by I forget his name, but he created Over the Garden Wall. So like other big names attached to this.
Oh, really?
So like a lot of cool names. Yeah, this has been a film I've been looking forward to, not just this year, but like for a long time. Because as you mentioned, this has been a passion project he's been wanting to make for like 20 years now, and like no studio would touch it until he made The Shape of Water. And it's, and so I was, when it was announced, like in, I think it was like 2018 or so or whatever, Shape of Water came out, like the year after Shape of Water came out, I was so hyped that he was finally getting to make it. And I think it very much lived up for the most part to the hype. What did you think?
Yeah. So Del Toro is a very talented filmmaker. I've seen quite a few of his films. I really love The Shape of Water. That's actually my favorite of his films. Yeah. Pan's Labyrinth is the movie that was like his breakthrough, which is an incredible film. If you haven't seen it, check it out if you'd like to. And he had always teased this at his Pinocchio movie. And I think like it was the film idea was revitalized in 2018, but according to the Wikipedia, which you know is accurate, he originally announced this project in 2008, so almost 15 years ago, but then it went through development hell, and then I think at one point it was canceled just because he didn't get enough funding for it. And then, like as you said, Dana, after Shape of Water, Netflix was like, all right, we're going to give you your budget, go ahead and make it, and he's just like, sweet, let's do it. So I had always heard about his version of Pinocchio, but I didn't really know what to expect because the only version of Pinocchio I had seen was the Disney one. And the Disney one is an amazing movie, as we talked about in a previous banter episode. But even though I've never read the novel, I know that it's not an accurate adaptation. Even though that movie is still very dark, it doesn't go it's not nearly as dark as the novel, which always blew my mind. So when trailers started coming up, and when I saw the character designs and just the overall tone, it was like, okay, this looks like they're going to follow the novel and actually make it really gritty and serious and just foreboding. And getting to see the movie in the theater too, which I would recommend if you haven't seen it. If you did have the option of seeing this in theaters or on Netflix, I would recommend the former if you would like to. But I really, really loved it. I thought this is easily, no question, the best animated film of this year, unless something else comes out that just is like a surprise. But yeah, this is an absolutely wonderful animated film. And I think why I respect it so much is that it is not afraid to be, it's a family film, but it's not afraid to go down these very dark routes and also display these very strong themes. I can't think of the word. Yeah, these themes that are in a lot of ways very complicated, especially given the time period this movie takes place. Rather than in like 1800s Italy, like the novel, this takes place during World War One, specifically during the rise of fascism. And so there's a lot of like these political and religious themes thrown throughout this movie, but it still retains the heart and likability of the character and the story. And I think for some people, maybe they would say like, oh, the tone is inconsistent. But I think we've come to a point now, especially with children's entertainment and family entertainment, it has, people assume, oh, it has to be so like light and fluffy. You can't like scar kids. But like, no, this is what children's entertainment and family entertainment was like, let's say 70 years ago, like at the height of Disney, of the golden age of Disney. They were able to show these complicated themes, but also introduce these likable, fantastical elements. And that's what Del Toro's Pinocchio felt like. I feel like we haven't seen an animated film like this in such a long time. And it's so special to see that. And the animation too, this is stop motion. It's incredible. It's among some of the best stop motion animation I think I've seen in any movie. It's like up there with Fantastic Mr. Fox in some instances. So
yeah,
overall, I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, I agree. This is one of those movies that I think really owns its PG rating.
Shockingly PG.
Yeah, I know. Like, I remember he originally wanted it to be a PG-13, but I'm imagining, I guess, it just... but it was able to come out as PG, and it's a... Yeah, it's a very a beautiful-looking film. And I specifically also want to bring up, like, the voice acting was probably the biggest surprise for me. Like, normally with these, like, I feel like these Hollywood big-budget movies, the voice acting is not, like... as like is not that, you know, noticeable or that great. But this one, like, I feel like everyone gave like a legit great performance, and like, and was like doing like a specifically like good voice, like good acting, like more than what you normally get with these Hollywood kind of films. Specifically, I was very impressed by Cate Blanchett, who plays like this monkey in the movie, who like you don't notice, you don't see Cate Blanchett. She's just doing these kind of monkey noises and does a really good job. Honestly, I predict she could probably win the Annie for voice acting this year. Like, what did you think of the voice acting?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Cate Blanchett, because I knew she was in the movie, but I literally didn't know who she was. And until the credits came out, I was like, she was the monkey? Like, yeah. That's amazing. And yeah, I think the voice acting is very good. I think the kid who plays Pinocchio, I don't think he's great, but I think he's passable. And also Finn Wolfhard, who plays Candlewick, his accent's really inconsistent, mm-hmm. but everyone is at least fine. Like there's no like bad voice acting performance. I really love David Bradley. He plays Geppetto, and
yeah, he's amazing too.
Yeah. And the movie too, when it starts off, like I love how it has an interesting beginning where Geppetto essentially gets a second chance at being a father. And I don't know if this is like a spoiler. It's the opening scene of the movie, basically, but he loses his son, and it basically he creates Pinocchio in like a drunken rage because he's like, I need another chance at like being a father. I want to recreate my son, basically. I keep comparing it to the Disney film because it's the only real. And when I say the Disney film, the original one, not the remake that didn't exist, but like when he's making Pinocchio in the Disney one, it's like, it's so like, you know, peaceful and calm. But this one, like the lightning strikes and he's like, yeah, when he's carving the wood, there's so much intensity and power. It's like that immediately sets the dark tone. And I was completely sucked in. I'm just like, okay, if it's this dark when he's creating our main character, I can't even imagine like what the other scenes are going to be like. And like David Bradley does an amazing job, like showcasing that range of emotion, yeah, too. And also I really liked Ron Perlman as well. Ron Perlman plays the Podesta, who's this like government official, and it's a little awkward at first just because he has, I guess he's supposed to be Italian, but he has more of like an American accent, but it really fits with his character, and I like Ron Perlman too.
Yeah, everything you said is, yeah, I just one thing about like the new Geppetto opening, I think it also, what I liked about that, it kind of gives like, I think, granted, like you, I'm basing a lot of my knowledge based on the Disney one, so maybe like the book or the novella or any of the ones fixes it, but I feel like it gives a reason for, it gives me more of like, I don't know, like a stakes for like Geppetto, for like why he like really does care about Pinocchio and why it's more than just like, oh, I want a son, I want to be a dad. It's like, there's a lot more to this character than you get from like, I think most of the other Pinocchio under like, and why he'd build a puppet boy, why he'd want a son, that I think you don't normally get with these kind of Pinocchio adaptations. What did you think of like the music in this? Cause to me, that was like the weakest part for me. This is a musical, by the way.
Yeah, the music was interesting because the original score done it was done by Alexandre Desplat or Desplat. I don't know how to pronounce it. Who's one of my favorite composers? The score is great. The songs are good. Honestly, I didn't really mind them all too much. Like, I especially love some of the slower songs, but it's one of those musicals where they kind of put all the music it near the beginning, but then afterwards completely abandon it. And that's oddly like what the original Pinocchio does too. So it's interesting that they made this a musical in the first place. I think they could have done without it, but the song still complemented the story, the characters, and the journey. And speaking of like the characters and the journey, I've never read the novel, so I don't know how accurate it is. And I guess I remember you had mentioned this somewhere. I think you mentioned in your Letterboxd review that the original Pinocchio, that some people criticize it because it doesn't have much of a story, which is complete nonsense in my opinion, because it's not, it's so segmented. Yeah. And you're just like a slice of life. What I like about this film is that it does retain the slice of life nature, but the narrative is way more focused. Like Del Toro has said that he wanted this version of Pinocchio to be more grounded in reality. So there's not a lot of the fantastical elements that we honestly expect from Pinocchio aren't really present. Like the blue fairy is technically just in a different form, but there's no like Pleasure Island or anything. There's no donkey transformation.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do really like is that how thematically it's way more focused on the fatherhood aspect, which is not really present in the Disney version. Because Geppetto is, yeah, his father, but he doesn't really do a whole lot in the story other than create him. He just sends him off to school unsupervised, and he's just like, well, I gotta go find him now. But in this one, it's like he's actually trying to like teach Pinocchio these morals and lessons. And Pinocchio is way more, honestly, he's more naive, but he's also more of a brat in this one. But that's kind of how I would perceive the character of Pinocchio if it were done in modern times, just because he is so curious, but at the same time, he doesn't really know much of anything.
Yeah, which I think really, which is what is brilliant about this, and I don't know if we can go into this or not, but this is the way his innocence and naivete fits well with the setting, and I think and complements the ultimate like message that Del Toro is trying to make with this kind of setting. And I also, and yeah, that's what I was kind of saying earlier. Like, I think this is probably the closest, like, as far as, like, Geppetto and Pinocchio as, like, a father-son relationship. I feel like this is, like, the one where I felt like the one where there's the most, like, connection. And I feel like I really felt like there was a bond. Because, like, yeah, I think that's not that there's anything wrong with it, because I feel like the Disney one is aiming for a different thing. But, yeah, I think you could argue there's not as, you do not feel as much with his relationship with Geppetto and Pinocchio. You feel that more with Jiminy Cricket in the film, and this one I think does a great job of that. And yeah,
like Geppetto does get his second chance at fatherhood when creating Pinocchio, but at the same time he wants Pinocchio to be something that he isn't, because
yeah,
Pinocchio wants to be himself. He wants to be just like his own self as a puppet or a boy, whereas Geppetto wants him to be more like his son, to the point where we realize like, yeah, even though he clearly loved his child, he was still very flawed too, in just terms of who he wants his son to be. And he's trying to recreate that, when unfortunately you can never recapture that person. You can't remake a person after they're deceased, which is ironic considering Pinocchio dies multiple times and returns, which is pretty grim. But it just seems very consistent and thought out with all the themes, and how it does tell the story in a way where I think kids will be able to understand. Maybe they'll be a bit alienated by it. So like, I'm not sure if I would necessarily show this to my kid if they were younger, let's say. I would probably wait till they're a bit older, but it's still not something that I would say like, oh, you gotta be this is only for like 13-year-olds and up. But
yeah,
which, by the way, I don't understand how this got a PG rating, and Wendell and Wild was rated PG-13, because this is way more dark.
I agree that that was like I feel like they screwed like letter like Netflix like screwed up the ratings. Like I agree, I was confused. This is okay.
Do you think that this version of Pinocchio might have a, I want to say a similar, no version of Pinocchio is ever gonna top the Disney version, but do you think that this will spark like a new trend for different Pinocchio films? Because there's been many Pinocchio films that seem to have been recapturing the Disney one. Do you think that this movie will be like a catalyst for a new series of Pinocchio films based on this film?
I hope not, because I think we've been getting way too many lately. Hello, Pauly Shore, how you doing? I think if anything, I think this is kind of like will be, if anything, I think this is more what we'll get is like a spark of new like fairy tales or like that are more, trying to recapture sort of like a, add more of like a combining the sense of realism, but also like my hope and like that. My hope is also that with like this kind of film that we get more animated and family films that do embrace a more mature and darker side, if anything. I think that we'll get that are more complex and more than just say like, not that there's anything wrong with like a fun cutesy movie, but I think like more something more comp I feel like in the lately we've been getting a lot more animated movies in the vein of say like Minions than say like I don't know something like a like Labyrinth or something like kind of embraces the more darker side or Coraline another example. And I wonder if that this film kind of shows, if anything, I hope shows that there's going to be more that there is room for family entertainment that's more darker and more mature, than just some cutesy stuff.
Yeah, I think this probably will, just because like I've always been a fan of when family films are able to showcase really dark material, just because I do think kids enjoy that though. Like I'm not saying it's like I'm not saying I take like pleasure in seeing kids being traumatized, but I think sometimes kids like being afraid because it challenges them. It's sort of like they want to see like these really weird, strange things, but it also showcases like really not only amazing artistry, but interesting storylines and interesting situations for the characters to get involved in. Ultimately, that's what sucks them in to the story. And with this, especially with this film, and probably like a lot of films like from Laika, like Coraline, and I guess another example probably like Wolfwalkers from a few years ago. Those have really intense moments, but it's not a horror film though, because it still grounds itself with the characters and it's still like relatively light with its storytelling too. So that's what I really liked about this movie, was how it wasn't afraid to show that.
Yeah, and I think it also like you have to understand. I think a lot of these stories like are good ways of like helping us kind of grow up and like get like realize and like our place in the world and stuff like these more darker films and also so yeah, I hope we get more of that.
I think this film too should. I hope it wins the Academy Award for Best Animated Feature. Do you think it has a chance?
No, it does. I think this is probably a lock, honestly,
Oh,
because
really?
like usually movies like when usually a non-Disney movie wins when like the Disney fare is generally perceived weaker compared to
We'll
the other
get
stuff.
into that with our next film.
I think Del Toro is such a strong name. They're doing a good job campaigning it. I think the real question is does this have a shot at the 10th or ninth slot for Best Picture, which is something a lot of pundits are considering. And does it have a shot at any other, even outside of that, or any other categories such as adapted screenplay, score, and production design? And so I guess that's the real question is.
I'm gonna say at least for Best Picture, no, because we're already in a very tight Best Picture race for like front runners. It's been a very good year for movies. Honestly, I could see one thing that we actually this kind of ties into my next point, but the sound design of this movie was like it's something I really don't pay attention to often in animated films, just because I kind of take it for granted. But there's some, especially with like the glass and like the footsteps too on certain like materials, because sometimes they're in like a house with like cobblestones or they're in dirt, and the sound design is just really, really well executed with like the glass rolling, footsteps, lightning, rain, like water and all that. It's very impressive. So this could, I would push this for a sound nomination and maybe best original score as well, hopefully. But
I'd also maybe say visual effects and production design would also be another, I think, one. I know they've never really done, I haven't done, I think they've done it, no, they haven't. But I think production design would also be good one, because I think there's a lot of, this has like a lot of Del Toro's film has a unique, great production design. And I think it's a, I love the look of this movie. And I also maybe think maybe visual effects, possibly.
there's some, yeah, a lot of the model work is particularly impressive, especially with I guess Monstro. I don't know if they ever called Monstro by his name, but like that is a giant puppet, at least I assume it is. And I'm just like, wow, it's like it's all they did that all by hand. And like that's why stop motion is so cool to see. It's and I mentioned this when we in the Wendell Mile episode, but I think Henry Selick mentioned that stop motion has gotten so good to the point where you can't tell the difference between it and CGI. So he intentionally made it like look a little rougher. Like not that it looks bad, but it was an artistic choice. And I think the same was with Pinocchio, because there's some moments in like, especially with characters that had like cloth or facial hairs, you could see like the imperfections of like, you could tell like the artist, like their hand was like moving the puppet. So it's not like consistent. And that's cool to see, just because you could, that's like someone was like touching that. There was like an artist's hand was on that, moving it frame by frame. And there's some impressive like one take shots, like when the monkey is going to the carnival, and it's like this one unbroken, probably 15 second shot, which doesn't sound long, but in stop motion, that probably took like 6 months or something. It reminded me of the sushi scene in Isle of Dogs, where there's just it's so detailed and it's all unbroken. So you got anything else to add, Dana?
I'm trying to think. There's good, because there's a lot I could say. I'm just trying to think what else. I feel like we've barely scratched the surface, but
What did you think about Jiminy Cricket's role?
oh yeah, I think it's a
Or Sebastian Cricket.
Sebastian, yes, that is his name. I think I like the going back to as far as like alterations from the Disney version. And again, we should preface this. Neither of us have read the novella. We probably sh should at this point, considering how many Pinocchio movies we've been getting. But I love the kind of twist. Like there's a good twist, and I'm not gonna spoil it, but I think the twists and the alterations to the character is unique and kind of gives a and I think gives a good explanation of why the cricket is, so determined to kind of help Pinocchio. And it kind of gives him more stakes, which I really appreciated. What did you think of Sebastian, and also the performance, I suppose, by
Ewan McGregor.
yeah.
I liked how basically, even though he's still like his conscience, I guess, doesn't really interact all that much with Pinocchio. And it was kind of interesting how even the humans can understand him. He's like really the only talking animal, I guess, in the movie. Because there's no Gideon and Honest John aren't in this movie. So there's no anthropomorphic animals other than the cricket. So it's interesting how he's like, he doesn't really interact with Pinocchio all that much, because Pinocchio just really doesn't care. So he's more like a companion for Geppetto.
Yeah, which I think is a unique twist. The only thing I didn't like about it is I feel like in the middle they really didn't have as much for him to do, and I
Yeah.
do think the joke of, I don't know if it's a spoiler or not, but like they constantly like squashed him constantly, and it got like there's a running gag with that, and it kind of got old.
I thought that was pretty funny,
It was
honestly.
funny, but I think it's like I wish they could have done more with him, I think, than just after a while. I think it was interesting. What do you think of, I don't know, as far as the villain, did you pre like him, like
Oh,
what do
like
you think
the Stromboli type
the
character.
Stromboli character?
Yeah, honestly, it's nice that this movie basically had one central protagonist or antagonist. And it's because in like the original Disney film, Stromboli is in one scene, and it's just automatic portrays him as like, okay, like he lures Pinocchio and pretty much, or I guess Honest John, Gideon do, and he tricks him to be like, oh, you think he's a good guy, but then he's actually a bad guy. Whereas this time they drag that out, but not in a way where it becomes annoying or distracting. It's just, he's just a very like cold hearted person who like takes advantage of Pinocchio in ways that's like way more like complicated, just because it, like he signs him onto a contract and he says like, I want you to send half of my profits to Geppetto, my father. And then like he goes through all this, like he like hoodwinks him. So yeah, Christoph Waltz is, as always, fantastic.
Yeah, he was amazing. Another one, a great performance. Like, again, yeah, I just, that was something I loved about this, just the voice acting. And I think, yeah.
He's basically the Fox character too.
Yeah.
In this,
no, that's what I think.
It's like they combine the three characters.
Which, you know, and I think is what was a smart, that there's like one central villain, and that I guess you could argue, like, I think with this one that makes it stand out, makes it kind of more like focused in a way, which is what.
Yeah. Do you think that the change in location and time, or not location, in time, from like sort of a timeless 1800s type narrative to like the world wars, and adding these themes of like fascism, religion, devotion, and all that, do you think that was necessary, or how do you think it added?
Oh, I think that was like probably brilliant. I think that's like what kind of makes this stand out, like, and you can, why I think this film is justified, because it has a unique interpretation to the film. And I think it's such a clever take of like, okay, he wants to be a real boy, and he wants to be but what does that mean to be a real boy? And I think it's the brilliance of like having a puppet in a society when everyone, you know, what does it mean to be in a society where everyone has to conform, and that kind of adds the theme of like the Pinocchio's of like, okay, he's a naive, misguided boy or child, and he needs like guidance, but being in a society where, okay, who is the proper guidance? And I think this was like a brilliant, and as I think what I think is probably what justifies this more than anything, and also is what makes it unique. And I mean, that's what I love. I think everyone is praising about that is that it's such a clever, unique addition.
Yeah, that's what impressed me the most, is how they were able to. It surprisingly, I don't think, dates the movie or makes it feel like out of place, oddly, because the novel was written well before that time period. But the themes of just like grounding it based on our like the themes of fascism, and also just like really horrible actions that many governments have caused during that time period, really translate well to the story's themes, especially Kyle Gieson with the main character, who's, and there's also the recurring motif of like the puppet master, like with the Stromboli character being like I'm your master, and you're just basically, you have no control, like even though you're alive, you have to obey, essentially. It's one of those movies where the added themes of the different themes that it adds, I think, only benefited the entire experience.
And I think, again, as I think it's brilliant, I think just it adds a level of like, I think of like a thought I've never thought about in these sort of, you know, fascist societies, is like when you're growing up, who is, I think is a clever take, is like, who are you, who do you take guidance from? And I think that's a good allegory to look for Pinocchio, since he's like misguided. Like, who do you trust, and who is your quote unquote conscious, is like a new theme to add to this, you know?
Yeah. Anything else to add?
None of, probably do, but I can't think at the moment. What else do you have? Do you have anything else to add?
I basically got nothing else. But oh, I guess one quick thing: the ending, incredible.
Yeah,
incredible. I'm not gonna spoil it, but it's, I was shocked with how moving the ending was to this movie. So yeah. Anyway, we're about out of time for Pinocchio, so what are your final thoughts?
This is a very charming and wonderful animated film. I'm so glad Del Toro got to make it. It kind of proves that, like, when, like, there's a talented filmmaker, you should let them make what they make. And, like, I think this is also a symbol that we need to treat animation with more respect. I mean, studios need to not be worried about, like, Because I feel like the reason he was not able to make it was because I think people were afraid of these like dark themes he's adding, and that would be too dark. And I think this proves that that shouldn't be a concern. And yeah, I think this is a very unique take, and I'd love it. And I'd probably give it an 8 out of 10. The only like my only big criticisms really with it is I think really just the songs where I think they were could have been a little better, and I think they weren't as necessary. But other than that, this was great.
Yeah, this, as stated, I think this movie is awesome. I really love how this movie just even exists. Like, this is something that I'm so happy was able to get made. And as someone who enjoys animation too, it's refreshing to see something so different, yet so personal and passion filled. Like, there's so many animated movies, especially this year. Like, there's been some great anime movies this year, but there's also been some really bad ones. And those just seem like committee thinking, money, let's sell some more toys. This is not like that at all. It's like everything, it's like the anti-animated film, but in like a good way. Mm. Though, just because it embodies so many things that many studios don't want to do, but it ultimately creates a stronger product in the end. So Del Toro's Pinocchio is currently still playing at Film Scene and in downtown Iowa City, and it'll also be streaming on Netflix on December 9th. If you haven't seen it, go check it out if you would like to. And either way, it's just an all-around awesome movie. I think it's honestly Del Toro's best movie since Shape of Water, because he did Nightmare Alley last year. I liked it way more than Nightmare Alley.
Me too.
So yeah, awesome movie. Go check it out if you would like to. I'm gonna give it a 9 out of 10. It's great. So we're going to move on from Del Toro's Pinocchio, a Netflix anime film, to the ultimate animated powerhouse known as Disney, and we're going to talk about their latest animated film, Strange World, which was directed by Don Hall, who is a alum of the University of Iowa. It was also co-directed by Keen Wynn, and they also wrote the film as well. Stars Jake Gyllenhaal, Dennis Quaid, Jabuki Young-White, Gabrielle Union, and Lucy Liu. And the plot, A Strange World, from IMDb, it's about a family of explorers named the Clades, whose differences threaten to topple their most latest and crucial mission, in which they discover this unique world that no one's ever inhabited. What did you think about this movie?
I went in this mostly blind, like a lot of us, because like I feel like because Disney did not really do a good job at marketing this and kind of gave me this impression like, oh, is this not going to be a good movie? And then when I went in, it was like it was a pretty good film, science fiction film. I really like I saw it in 3D, which is, I think, a good way to see it, because I think the appeal of this movie is kind of the environment and taking in this like animation. I think it was a very good film, and it's a shame it was, you know, didn't get marketed that well, because I feel like a lot of our audience probably has not heard about it.
Yeah, so Strange World is Disney's 61st animated film, and much like Pixar, every time Disney releases a new animated film, I get excited about it, and I'm one of those people that always keeps up to date with Disney news and all that, just because I'm a nerd. So I knew about Strange World since last year, and apparently nobody else did, because we'll get into the marketing later, but I remember when I saw the trailer for this movie, I saw the trailer before Thor 4, and I was like, this looks really, really cool. Like, mm-hmm. The world it's creating, the story that it wants to tell. It was like, it's very unique, especially after the past two Disney films were definitely more what Disney was known for, with like Raya and the Last Dragon and Encanto. Especially Encanto was a fantasy musical which basically swept the nation. It's basically Disney's new Frozen. So going from that to Strange World shows like, hey, Disney is going to do something different. I like when Disney does something different. Let's go. I'm excited. And then it bombs. So in case you haven't heard, Strange World is currently a box office disaster. The movie cost anywhere from $135 to $180 million. And it's set to lose, I don't know, probably about that much at the box office, unfortunately, is because they really didn't market this movie. And while it's probably because they were focusing more on Black Panther 2 as well as Avatar 2 coming up later this month, it's a shame that a movie, a Disney animated film, is bombing this hard.
No,
but
yeah.
but aside from that, I want to talk about the movie itself. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot of fun. I don't think it's one of Disney's greatest. I thought, personally, I liked Encanto more. But for the story, I do really admire how it was able to tell a story about flawed family dynamics, because Disney movies are usually, this is still a positive movie, but it's like almost like, it's like distractingly positive at times in terms of the energy and all that. And Encanto touched upon these themes as well about sort of the intergenerational trauma. And this one just shows more the flawed parenting that comes with that at points. And it's an angle that I really didn't expect them to take, but they did it well. And I do really like the characters that we follow. Like we have three generations of this family. One, Jaeger Quaid, played by Dennis Quaid, who's this like Indiana Jones macho like explorer who's probably one of the most egotistical Disney characters I've ever seen. And then you have Searcher, who is his son, who basically resents him. He becomes a farmer, and he doesn't really want anything to do with his father because his father pretty much abandons him. And then we have Ethan Quaid, who is Searcher's son, who's trying to find his place like in the world. He's like, he wants to be more of an explorer rather than be a farmer, ultimately realizing that Searcher is becoming what he didn't want to become, his father. And we'll touch more upon that, but I also really love the way this movie looks. Like, this movie has such a unique visual style, especially not just in the designs, but also in the colors. Like, this movie has a lot of purples, oranges, and whites, which is not a common color palette that I've seen in a Disney film or an animated film in general. So it has a very distinct look. And it honestly makes me kind of sad that this movie's bombing, because it's not like the movie's bad. It's a good movie. It's just people don't know it exists, and people should go see it if they would like to, because it's entertaining and it's fun.
Yeah, I agree, because like you, I like it when Disney experiments, and my fear is that, not that there's anything wrong with the classic Disney style, but I like when Disney does these unique things, especially because they're interesting. And this is obviously, I don't know if this is I cannot say if this is a passion project, but I can tell that there was like a lot of passion, and it's probably one of the most unique Disney films in a while. And I would
argue this was a passion project, honestly.
Yeah.
Because at least where, I assume you saw it at Film Scene.
Actually, I saw it back at home, but
I saw it at Film Scene, and there was actually, Don Hall did an intro for the movie, which I don't know if that was played at your theater, but he did an intro for it, and he said that there was so much of Iowa in the movie because there is a large emphasis on farming, and he's like, he grew up in Glenwood, Iowa, and his family were farmers too, so a lot, like, he put a lot of that into the movie. I don't know about like the family dynamics. I don't know the guy, but he seemed very passionate about it. And also, the movie takes a lot of inspiration from 50s pulp adventure stories, as well as other adventure films like King Kong and Jules Verne films. So I think he did have a lot of passion in this movie, which makes it even more sad that
I agree.
It's not doing well.
Yeah. I think like the best way to put it is like, you know, I think we were discussing beforehand how this was very similar to Treasure Planet in the sense of like of it being a retrofuturist. So like if like you could argue like if Treasure Planet, this is like Disney's Treasure Planet was Treasure Island in space, you could argue this is sort of like a 20,000 Leagues and Under the Sea in space. And I think like you, I think this is a far more interesting film than Treasure Planet. What did you think of?
We don't hate Treasure Planet, by the way. I just think it's mediocre.
No, I agree. No, it's just, yeah. It's.
There's a lot of people who love Treasure Planet, and we're not hating on it. So
no, what do you think of, like, I guess just kind of like the world itself? Because I feel like the world is, there's a lot of generational stuff. I think like, what do you think? Because I feel like this is probably one of the most unique sci-fi worlds I've seen in a long time. Would you kind of agree?
I think so too, because One, it's a world that you could only really do in animation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, unless you were the only film that I think, at least the live action, I think comes close to replicating sort of the unique creative world is probably Avatar, oddly enough, because, and I think this movie took a lot of inspiration from Avatar because it's also about the environment, but it's not like in your face with that message. But the world can only be created through digital art. And so it has a very distinct look with like the creatures, the backgrounds, the landscapes, with a lot of emphasis on like bright colors too. Like, and there's not a lot of, how do I just, it's, this is weird to describe, but like the light and the shadows don't have like this like glossy sheen almost. Cause I'm comparing it to the recently, the second trailer for the Super Mario Brothers movie came out. And that has a lot of emphasis on like light and texture. Whereas this one, it intentionally seems a bit more flat, which gets into the reveal of this movie, which we're not going to get into, but there's a really interesting twist to this mm-hmm. movie. So every creature has a distinct look where it's like they're almost, they're definitely underground and they haven't seen sunlight in mm-hmm. a while. It yeah. has, everything feels, just looks like a piece of like clay to it.
Which is kind of goes back to why I thought I saw, why I suggest people see this in 3D if they'd like to, is because like one of the, I think what one of, going back to Avatar, one thing I appreciate, I saw wise was the depth of field in the 3D version. You really get a sense of like how it's like a far more depth of field, and not that you kind of get a see how big this world is, and that was something cool I got from that. Yeah, what did you, the characters, what did you think of them?
The characters, I guess this is probably where Strange World maybe suffers a little bit, is how, I don't have a problem with the characters as individuals, but it's how they're used in the story, because the story, even though I appreciate Disney for telling a story about a very flawed family dynamic, the ultimate like story beats are pretty predictable. I was hoping that they wouldn't go down these kinds of routes. Mm-hmm. And also too, this is something that I read, which I actually do kind of agree. In the opening scene, there's like, they do the gag where you think someone's dead, but really not. Or like, so, you know what I'm talking about, like the ice.
Yeah.
And that, unfortunately, that kind of sets the tone that it's like, there's not really a large sense of danger for any of the characters. Like the entire time,
mm-hmm.
like I really didn't feel like I was scared, like, oh, I don't, are these characters going to survive or not? I was more infatuated by the feeling of like discovery. Which yeah. I think was probably the point, because it's not an act. I guess it is kind of an action movie, but it's more of an adventure story, because these characters are explorers. The reason why they're exploring this world, and we haven't touched upon the main point, is why they're even down here. It's because they're trying to get this power source, because Searcher discovered a power source called Pando. That's what it's called?
It's like, it's like Pando or something.
It's like this glowing green ball. It looks like the stone from Moana, and that's what powers their whole society. It's like a utopian world, kind of similar to something you'd see in Doctor Strange 2. Mm. So yeah, they're down there because they realize that their power source is dying, and if it dies, then their existence is basically finished. So that
yeah.
they discover that. But then it's like, okay, where's the heightened sense of danger with like the creatures? It's like, you know that they're gonna live. So that's kind of the biggest issue I have with Stranger, was that despite it being an adventure, I didn't really fear for the characters in any way. I cared about the characters, but I wasn't like concerned if like they were gonna live or die.
Yeah, and I think I was more invested with like the interpersonal drama,
mm-hmm.
like the family, and I think going back, maybe that was kind of the point. And maybe that's why I feel like, I think because I see a lot of people online are not as connecting with it as us, and I'm wondering maybe that's why, because they go in expecting more of like a fantasy adventure and not really focusing on the interpersonal drama. But yeah, I kind of agree. That was kind of, because like, go ahead.
No, you finish.
No, I, go ahead.
Sorry. Oh, okay. I'm confused, like why people, in terms of like the interpersonal issues with the family is one of the best parts of the movie, in my opinion, just because it's something I haven't seen. I'm surprised that people have a problem with it in here, and didn't in Encanto, because I think Encanto touched upon very similar themes, and maybe because that's a musical too and had a lot more cultural elements, but there's a lot of similar family dynamics being explored in this film that Encanto did, but Encanto was way better received than this movie was.
Yeah, and
I'm not even talking about money here either.
You know, no, and I agree, and I find that weird, because I'm not the hugest fan of Encanto. I think it's a good movie. My biggest problem is I feel like the structure of the film was probably my biggest issue with it.
That's fair.
But I feel like this one handled, I personally felt a lot of these themes better than in some ways, like in Encanto. And yeah, I wonder what they are kind of resonating with that. Did you like what did you think of the character of Splat?
Splat, the little, I don't even know what it, just a little creature. Splat's a creature that is basically Disney's, you know, merchandisable character. They don't talk. They just look cute, basically.
Yeah.
So it's in every Disney film, basically. I didn't connect too much with Splat.
No, I just feel like Splat's, I think people there. No, I agree. Like, because I've heard, like, again, another criticism I've heard about this is like, oh, Splat's not. I'm like, yeah, he's one of those characters. What else?
But then people should be complaining about that with the magic carpet from Aladdin. No one complains about magic carpet.
I know. It's like,
so it's like, it's people pick, like, people pick and choose with like Disney films. It's like never consistent.
No, I agree. It's never consistent.
The one thing I really love too about this movie is how the tone, every single thing about this movie tone wise feels like a classic adventure story.
Yeah.
Minus like the weird power sources, the weird technologies. It has like this retro futuristic Indiana Jones type vibe to it, specifically taking inspiration from like 50s comics. The opening sequence sets the tone of like the characters and the world, and all in 2D animation. I'm glad Eric Goldberg is still employed at Disney, because he did the animation for that. So yeah, it's like every single, a lot of the, even in the scenes where characters are talking, there's not a lot of action going on. It still feels natural in the story's pace of an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing just has a lot of fun with it. Like a lot of the action sequences and a lot of the worlds that they explore, it's fun. And I think if I were a kid and I saw this, I would have loved it.
Yeah,
I genuinely think I would have. Like I enjoy it. I don't think the movie's great though.
Yeah, I think you can also clear. Yeah, this film very much reminds, this film also kind of reminds me of Fantastic Voyage, that kind of like, or movie, kind of just like exploring a world and like interactions with that. So like, I think if you are a big fan of Fantastic Voyage or 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, that kind of like exploration of the unknown, like, because again, that's what I kind of liked about this film. It kind of reminded me of like exploring the ocean, like but in like space. And if you'd like that, you should definitely check this out if you'd like to, you know.
Yeah. I guess we should also, this is like inevitable with this movie, just how it's being received financially. And unfortunately, we can't really go into like exact costs and stuff, but the fact that this is a big budget, like Disney film too, like it has the Disney name all over it, and they barely advertised it, is genuinely shocking. Like, this is not something that you would expect company like Disney to do, like in this day and age. Like, if this was like the late 90s, like when Iron Giant came out, Iron Giant was not advertised at all. They didn't do like fast food tie-ins. They didn't do merchandise tie-ins, because I don't think the studio realized what they had was gold.
No.
But yeah, with Disney, even if let's just say the product is absolute garbage, they're still going to push it out. Like Hocus Pocus 2. That was terrible, and they still pushed it out. Even Disenchanted 2, which came out on Disney Plus, not a good movie. They still pushed it out. They still advertised it. Why didn't they do it with this?
And that's why I've been focusing it, because I think sends a message to us Disney fans, and why like when like we know about this film, and like, and it made me go in like, okay, maybe they have no confidence because this movie sucks. And I have no idea. And that's what,
like, there's Disney fans on Twitter and on Instagram. I remember when Box Office Mojo and like Variety and Dateline, they were saying like Strange World is like set to lose X amount of dollars, biggest Disney box office bomb in years. There are people in the comments being like, I didn't even know this movie existed until just now. That's a really bad sign that you did a very bad job marketing your movie, Bob Chapek. Anyway, so
yeah,
and it's weird too that even I'm surprised there hasn't really been a lot of word of mouth either. I don't know if maybe just this movie is not connecting very much with audiences either. Because I was hoping maybe like by now it would have had like a resurgence. Like maybe people are like, oh, Strange World's actually really good. You should go see it because it's still playing in theaters and stuff. But I don't think it's going to be like that, unfortunately.
No. And I think it's, and that's the question. I think, because like I can kind of understand it. Because like while I think it's just a matter of like people not connecting as much with it. Because that was even my problem. Like, I liked it, but probably not as much as you. Like, I liked it, and I think it was, like, something about it. Like, there's nothing wrong with the movie. It was perfectly good, and I'm just wondering if it's, like, just something, a matter of personal connection. And I think it's one of those movies like Treasure Planet or something where it's, like, if the movie speaks to you, it's really going to speak to you, and I think it just needs to find its audience, and it hasn't found it yet. And hopefully it will, and
I think it's going to.
It will, and I think, if anything, I expect it. Like all of Disney's sci-fi films that do not do well, whether it be Tron, Treasure Planet, you know, Atlantis or whatever, I guarantee this will probably find it's a cult following eventually, or at least I hope so, because this deserves it. And
yeah, I said on my Letterboxd review that this will become a cult classic eventually. Don't know how long. It might be next year. It might be 10 years from now. But that's what happened with Atlantis, The Lost Empire, which if you haven't seen that movie, check it out if you would like to. It's awesome. But that movie bombed hard. It was very different from Disney films at the time because it was post-Renaissance. It had a really interesting animation style, but it wasn't like a musical. It was, the tone was darker, the stakes were larger, and it had a more mature feel to it. I don't think Strange World is as mature as that movie, and that's why I think I like Atlantis a little more.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still different, and no, a lot of cult films are different. They do stuff outside the norm. That's what makes cult films so mm-hmm. interesting. And it's honestly ironic that this movie might become a cult film when it was based on pulp magazines, which were like cult stories too.
Yeah,
that's like, what's
yeah,
so interesting. Like, so
maybe is why.
What if that was the? Whoa! What if that was the plan all along? What if they intentionally did all this, not because of any political reasons, but they just did it so it could be like the pulp magazines?
That's quite
a genius marketing plan now. Maybe we didn't think about this in the
honestly,
right way.
Honestly, I mean, it's quite possible. I mean, I remember like, I think in like the late 2000s, there was studios were trying to intentionally make cult movies just because they knew like, oh, that's like big thing. And it's possible. Maybe that's was their long-term strategy that we'll make this. They knew this would be work as a cult film.
This movie's genius. We were wrong.
This is genius.
Yeah. No. Everyone was wrong on the internet.
Yes. As always.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity, when you saw it, how many people were in the theater?
There were, granted, I guess there were a couple. Like, I was surprised. And granted, I think this was because it was around Thanksgiving weekend. And I think my town has always had, I don't know about Ames. I guess because Ames is such a boring city, like there's nothing else better to do than go to the movies. So
and go to Iowa State.
Yeah, yeah. So it was the thing though is I think for an opening weekend Disney film, it was probably bad specific. And I think for opening weekend Thanksgiving film, it was like probably not great. And you said you were the only one, right?
Well, for part of it, I saw this the other day. I was the only one there for like the first 25 minutes, and then a family walked in, which I was kind of surprised. I was just like, it's 25 minutes in. You missed like the whole setup. So I'm sure the kids might have been confused.
Yeah.
But granted, I saw it on a weekday, like late afternoon too. So it's mm-hmm. probably not the most represent. It probably doesn't best represent the movie, but yeah, I probably would have seen it over break, but there were other things I wanted to see instead. And I knew it was playing here. So mm-hmm. yeah, I don't know. It's just like it's such, this is an interesting movie, like in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Like I think in like a few months when it dumps on Disney Plus, there's gonna be like, you know, there's like those videos like the Disney movie that Disney doesn't want you to see, or the Disney movie you forgot completely existed, like those types of videos. That's gonna be this eventually, but not in a way where it's like so bad it's good, just because I think maybe depending on who you ask, like I've read some reviews that say the movie's just mediocre and stuff, but it's not like a terrible, terrible film.
No.
This is not one of Disney's worst. It's not Chicken Little or
Yeah, no,
anything.
and I like as I said, I feel bad for the film also just for how much
Yeah.
it's not getting both financially. I think this is far more deserving of its money, and also like it's like a better rating than I think. Like say Rise of Gru got. I don't know,
Almost
just
definitely. This is a much better movie than
like I feel bad, like it sucks.
that.
I don't know why Letterboxd has this at a 3.1 and Rise of Gru at 3.5. Like just
I
like
mean, I think with Minions, that was a lot of ironic ratings.
true, but you know, I'm just saying like at this point I just like I think yeah, I think definitely check this film out if you'd like to. Just I
Yeah.
think
Also, one thing that was cool about this movie, this was the first Disney film to have the new Disney 100
oh
logo.
yeah.
And it's an awesome logo,
It
too.
is. It is.
I surprisingly got chills, and I didn't
Oh,
think I would say that.
yeah. It's cool. We finally have a new logo.
You got anything else to mention about Strange World?
Yeah. Not really. I just think it's cool. I because yeah. I think we just. I hope it gets a following and hopefully gets a thing because I don't want the message from this film to be. Just stick to what Disney knows. Like, just make movies like Encanto and over again. Because, like, not that there's anything wrong with that. I like it. I just like it, like you. I love it when Disney experiments. And that this is, like, probably their most experimental film in a while. And I wish more people would appreciate it for that aspect. So, and yeah, it's a gorgeous film. I guess we do have our final verdicts now.
Yeah, we could do our final verdicts.
Okay, you go. I'll go. So I kind of already gave mine. So yeah, I think
Yeah.
I'd probably give it I'm giving it a 6 out of 10, though it's closer to the 7 because I think while I do appreciate this film a lot, I can kind of understand. I think for me it's might not be as like I don't know. I guess it's not as great as like it could be, but I can understand the criticisms. But that being said, I think it's still far more interesting and deserving, and yeah, and especially as I said, if you really like fantasy films like Fantastic Voyage or stuff like that, this is a movie I think that's really up your alley, and I think it deserves to be seen, and I'd definitely see it if you'd like to. So
Yeah, I enjoyed Strange World. And if by the time this episode comes out, if it's still playing in a theater near you, check it out if you would like to. I do I've all I'm all, I've always been a Disney fan. I've always been an outspoken Disney fan. And as much as I love when Disney does their classic like fantasy musicals, I also really love it when Disney does something different. My favorite Disney film is Fantasia. It's their most unique movie ever. They've never made anything close to it, excluding Fantasia 2000. But I like when, even if it doesn't always turn out great or even good, at least they tried doing something different. And Strange World does do something different. And I think it did pay off because it's super entertaining. It's thematically surprisingly rich with its themes, and the characters are very likable, and the world is very beautiful too. So there's a lot of things going for it that I think they clearly tried and they had a lot of passion for. Unfortunately, they just didn't, the higher ups didn't, they probably didn't see anything in it that a lot of people, I guess, did. And they just didn't give it that marketing push, which is a shame and confusing at the same time. So yeah, if it's playing in a theater, check it out if you would like to, please. Or if not, it'll probably be on Disney Plus, so you could check it out there eventually. So yeah, I'm gonna give Strange World a 7 out of 10. It's a good Disney movie. So yeah.
Yeah.
And so that concludes this episode of Bijou Banter. Tune in next week where we're going to be talking about The Fabelmans and the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special. So, yeah, until next time, I've been Matthew.
And I've been Dana Woolery.
And we will see you all next time.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.